This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The film Trees in Trouble tells the stories of America's urban and community forests, their history, their growing importance to our health, economy, and environment, and the serious problems they now face.
America's urban forests are under threat from exotic, invasive insects and diseases.
We're faced with the functional extinction of an entire genus of trees.
Trees can improve air quality. You just kill all these trees in a short amount of time. What happens to public health?
We need to fight this. It's too important not to fight it.
The warning has been sounded. We need to be prepared.
Here to discuss the film are Trees in Trouble producer Andrea Torrice, Cincinnati Park Board Natural Resources Manager David Gamstetter, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Andrea, Dave, and Scott, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Scott, speaking of, how are things at the zoo these days?
Very busy, very good.
I can imagine.
We're gearing up for Festival of Lights, and we've got a Sumatran rhino whose last day of viewing will be Thursday before he goes to Sumatra and does what he can to promote his species down to less than 100. So he's got some work to do.
Yeah.
But we also have a native plant fundraiser symposium coming up on November 14th. Full day of really good talks about native plants. Anybody who's a gardener, landscape professional, anybody who likes plants or our native lands probably ought to think about coming.
I take it people can get more information at the zoo's website?
Absolutely.
Okay. Andrea, this film, tell me how that came to be. I mean, where did the idea from this? How did it all come together?
Well, several ways, Mark. First, I'm a jogger, and I was jogging through Burnett Woods, and I noticed that there were a lot of dead trees about 3 years ago. And when I came back to my house, I mentioned it to my neighbor, and she said, oh, there's this bug that's eating all the ash trees. I said, ash trees? I didn't really know anything about the trees, what was happening to them, but it was that conversation that kind of sparked my interest. I've also love trees, although I didn't really know much about any of these issues. And one of my favorite things about Cincinnati is the beautiful green canopy that we have here. I think it's one of its great attractions. So that was my initial interest. And then I just met Dave and I met Scott, and it kind of snowballed. And I said, this is a story that has to be told. And I think it's what I did was I used Cincinnati as sort of a case study for a larger national issue that many communities will be facing if they aren't already.
Well, who did you talk to in putting this together?
Well, I attended some U.S. Forest conferences on invasive pests. I do a lot of research before I get into something to really try to understand the issues. I studied a little bit of the science, of the ecology. I went, met with federal officials, arborists, scientists to kind of get a sense of things. And I really felt that even though I live here and I like doing stories about here, I felt that what Cincinnati was doing was really important. And also we have this amazing tradition and history of urban forestry here in the city, which we'll probably talk about a little more later.
Most definitely.
I kind of things fell together along with getting a green light from some of my colleagues at PBS saying it's an interesting story, pitch it to us.
Dave, Andrea brought up the tree canopy. How much of a tree canopy do we have in the Cincinnati area?
In the city, we have 40% tree canopy, and we have about 5,000 acres of park forest, which is about 10% of the area of the city.
How does that compare with other urban areas?
We measure up very well. Most of the cities that people think are green, Denver, for example, we're actually greener than they are inside the corporation limits.
Scott, how did Cincinnati get to have such a strong tree canopy? I think this goes back to what Andrea was talking about, that we have just a history with this kind of thing, don't we?
The history is really cool. Back in the 1850s or mid-1800s, North America was largely logged. People were just becoming aware that all the trees are gone. And It was here a man named John Aston Warder, whose estate is still on the western side of town with beautiful trees on it, by the way, sort of became aware of the issue and started putting together a group of people to do something about it. And they formed the American Forestry Congress or Association. And then it, in 1882 had the first Congress, American Forestry Congress here in Cincinnati. Everybody, you know, who cared about trees from the continent came here to talk about them. And it started there. A couple days later, the school superintendent closed the schools and sent the kids up to an abandoned vineyard up in Mount Adams to plant trees, an area we now know as Eden Park. And, you know, that carried on a great legacy, which was sort of picked up again with Cincinnati Urban Forestry. It was one of the earliest groups. Was it the 60s, David?
About 1980. But the key point of the first American Forest Congress is that was the predecessor for the U.S. Forest Service.
So Cincinnati's been a catalyst in the reforestation movement. Andre, does it?
Yes. And very luckily, I did a lot of archival research and was able to find some stunning illustrations of that event that happened in the 1882. And also some beautiful archival images of Eden Park prior to its turning into a park now. So that's all in the film. This has never been seen before in many parts of the world, these archival images and photographs that I found. They were glass plates in the library at UC Bettman Library, which I found and then scanned, and they look beautiful. And that's part of the celebration of our canopy.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to join the conversation. And how important are trees to the environment, to our health? I mean, what are the benefits of trees, Scott?
There was a really cool study that came out just this summer. It was a Canadian study, and they measured persons or people's personal perception of their wealth and health. And it ruled out all the socioeconomic factors somehow. And they found in urban conditions that that people that live in a street with just 11 trees had self-perception of their quality of life at $10,000 more income than people without trees and at 7 years younger than people without trees. So I think that right there begins to tell the story. We all know the economic benefits, or a lot of people do anyway, of how trees, you know, increase property values and improve business districts and you know, the environmental issues with wildlife and urban heat islands and sequestering carbon and so forth. But I think it's really, I mean, where trees really have their impact is in communities and the what they do for people's, you know, sense of self, their sense of community, their health. A lot of studies showing that people are healthier with trees.
Yeah. And one of the people in the film is a U.S. Forest Service scientist who's done some really interesting work looking at the loss of trees and health as well. And he found out that where the emerald ash borer had buzzed through and killed a percentage of the trees, that there was a spike in cardiovascular disease and respiratory disease. It's a brand new study. It's very interesting, and they don't know why yet, but this is the kind of new information we're finding out about trees. There's a lot. I knew nothing other than I thought trees were pretty when I started the documentary, but I've done a lot of research, and I was amazed at how much there is that trees do for us that we're not aware of.
I saw a similar study where ash borer had removed the greater part of the canopy, where birth weights were reduced. Following the loss of ash tree, or the ash tree canopy. I have these photos. They're probably in your film, but of Livonia, Michigan, a little, you know, normal working class neighborhood with Cape Cod houses, beautifully canopied with ash trees. The photographs are prior to the loss from ash trees, during the loss, and then after. And you would not recognize this neighborhood as the same place. Yeah. It's night and day with trees versus without.
And I also think we as Americans need to revalue how we think about trees, their role in our lives are, because right now we're in a sort of, the reason I call it trees in trouble is we kind of are, like me, taking them for granted. They're pretty things on our streets, kind of look at them as a nuisance in some cases. I hate raking up the leaves, but they're finding out more and more about these benefits. And now with these invasive pests that have increased since the global trade, we have more threats to our trees. And that's of a great concern, which is why I made the film, is that I wanted to celebrate America's history and tradition and beautiful trees, but also say, hey, this is a wake-up call.
Dave, how do you see trees benefiting a community?
Well, if you want just the numbers, the average street tree pays us back $94 a year. That's $55 a year in abating energy costs associated with cooling. That's stormwater abatement that they're keeping out of the combined sewers that, you know, everybody's paying more in their sewage fees right now because of the combined sewer issue. But that's one inexpensive way of pulling water out and separating it. That's in carbon storage and air pollution abatement. So, you know, for us, it's had a huge impact, especially Emerald Ash Borer. We have we've cut down about 9,000 trees. About
that many?
Yeah.
Just in Cincinnati?
In Cincinnati, about 5,000 street trees and about 4,000 in the parks. And we still have a long way to go. We still have about half of our trails are closed because of the hazardous trees on them. It's had a pretty enormous impact, and there's still more on the horizon. Thousand canker disease was found in Butler County. That is a fatal disease on our black walnuts. And then, of course, Asian longhorn beetle out in Claremont. We haven't found it here, and hopefully we won't.
And there's no cure for that, really. There's not any mitigation other than cutting the trees down. So it's very sad. And this is happening. Emerald ash borer is an invasive insect that came from China. And I don't know, you guys can fill it in. It was first discovered in 2003 in Michigan. It was probably on crating material from China that was for electronics or something. And they just threw the crating material into the trash, and then a year later, the eggs hatched, and now it's in 32 states across the country, and it's heading west. They just discovered it in Colorado, and they're expecting it to be in Oregon very soon.
Surprised by the impact that the emerald ash borer has had on trees?
Well, you can talk about it. The thing is that the ash trees here do not have a resistance to the bug. That's the big problem. The experts here can talk a little bit more about these than I can, but they have no resistance, so they die, and they will go functionally extinct unless we come up with something. Dave, you want to?
There's about 250 to 300 of them that we're treating in the city. It's a fairly inexpensive way to prevent the insects from killing the trees, but it's something you have to keep up with every year. If you want to see what you're missing out on in fall color, drive down Martin Luther King Drive through Walnut Hills and into Avondale. We have a double row of autumn applause white ash that are flowering. The fall color is going on right now. They look amazing.
You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, and we'll continue talking about trees in trouble after this. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us this afternoon, the producer of the film Trees and Trouble, Andrea Torrice, Cincinnati Park Board Natural Resources Manager David Gamstetter, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Dave, what does an emerald ash borer look like?
Well, it's a tiny little green bug that for most of its life lives underneath the bark of the tree. And they feed on the cambium layer, the living tissue part underneath the bark.
This is like the vascular system
of
the tree,
yes,
right?
Yes, and that's how they kill the tree. They compromise the vascular system of the tree. and they die. It can be, depending on the number of insects and the pressure on the tree, it could be as fast as one season. Typically, we see it over 2, 3, 4 years.
So if you find one of these things, I mean, what should you do?
At this point, there's not much you can do.
It's too late.
Most of the trees in our region are already infested. Typically, we tell people if you see more than 25 to 30% of dieback in a tree, it's probably too late to treat it. If you still have an ash, if you're in the region and you still have an ash that doesn't appear to be infested, there's several ways you can mitigate that. And I would suggest that you start with a certified arborist.
Yeah, I've heard people say that if you are, I think it was I-71 was the main pathway that the emerald ash borer came in on initially. And I've heard people say that if you fly over that and look down onto I-71, you can actually see the path of destruction these things have left behind. Is that right?
Yes. And it's kind of stunning. Is another reason why I made the film. The way it travels is along freeways, because people have put firewood that was infested in their cars and then gone camping somewhere, and that's one of the ways that it spread. That's why it's spreading so quickly. The other thing is, we should be aware that we have over 8 billion ash trees in the United States. Different communities can do certain things, and that's one of the reasons, again, while I think Cincinnati is such a great story, is that when this crisis started to be realized a few years ago, Dave and Scott's work became really important, and that was people can do something about this, even though we're probably going to lose most of the ashes in the United States, and that is by communities coming together and replanting and reforesting. Because when you lose a tree or a bunch of trees, you lose more than just the tree. And maybe you guys can talk about the loss and what you're doing. You know, there's a group called Taking Root.
Taking Root. I know about that.
Oh, yeah. Scott knows all about Taking Root. That's interesting, Scott. Your goal is to plant so many trees by a certain date.
We're trying for 2 million by 2020, which is – that number was derived because there's 2 million people roughly in the 8-county tri-state. So one tree per person seemed like a reasonable idea. It's so important to replant. Even if we weren't facing this crisis, trees are mortal creatures. You know, the big trees we have now won't last forever. The big trees that we have right now were planted by people 50 years ago, 100 years ago. So we need to leave that legacy for future generations. It's a very important legacy to leave. So in the best of times, you need to be planting trees. Now, when we're facing these crises, it's important to plant even more, you know, and to do it smart, to get a lot of diversity out there so we don't have all our eggs in one basket when these other, perhaps other insects or diseases come around. And, use proper planting technique, use proper mulching technique, good maintenance practices. It's all part of the same package. It's all very important.
So, how does somebody participate in Taking Root?
Well, go to our website, takingroot.info, and get in touch with our coordinator, Matt Stenger. Get in touch with anybody that's involved, and we'll put you to work. And if you've got expertise, we can use it. And if you got money, we can spend it. We'll spend it on trees. It's always about resources, right?
what are the implications, though, if we don't address this? I mean, how much of the tree canopy do we face losing?
Most of our native forests here are about 10% are ash. So if you think about that, you know, in the park system, for example, that's, you know, 5,000 acres. That's a lot of area. That's 10% of that. And then some areas have even higher percentage of ash. Some of the neighborhoods like College Hill, Northside, Mount Airy, even higher percentage. So it's quite a significant impact.
So, how well have like the firewood quarantines worked in prohibiting and inhibiting the movement of the emerald ash borer?
Well, that gave up on that a long time ago.
Okay.
So
for ash.
For ash. It's still in effect for Asian longhorn beetle in Claremont County, and it's in effect in Butler County for thousand canker disease with walnuts.
Did they give up on it for the emerald ash borer because it just wasn't
effective? It escaped the quarantine zone. and it's pretty much throughout the eastern United States right now.
But in practice, it is a good idea for anybody listening. Don't move firewood. Just go, if you're going camping, buy it locally, burn it up, and don't move it around. It's just an avenue for moving problems around the country.
And also, not to be, even though the film has sort of a depressing title, it is a kind of a wake-up call. And I wanted to say that replanting is really important, but that the federal government has a and state governments are also doing some very important work, which I talk about in the film, which is they're gathering seeds of the ash now, and they're putting them in seed banks for future generations so that hopefully they'll be able to develop a hybrid trees that will be resistant. There's also been some research that 1% of the black ash do seem to be slightly resistant to the EAB, so maybe there will be hope for some of the ash trees. So those are some of the things that I try to bring up, all of the how both at the local level and on the national level, things that we can do, including improving our trade policies or our regulations of quarantining the boats, because we get over something like 3,000 cargo ships a day into our ports.
So that's the main way, though, that these have gotten in, is because of globalization. They've come in through imports and that kind of thing.
Yes, and also plants, exotic plants, the dirt from South America, fruits, et cetera. Not fruits, flowers. But that's been improved. But though that is the main vehicle for which these invasives have been coming into the country.
But like Dave was saying, once they're here, it's hard, isn't it? It's hard to get rid of them.
It is, and they're going to be here for a long time. Even after our ash trees die out, people are still, you know, treating ash trees, and seedlings are growing up in our parks, you know. So there's going to be a food source for quite a while, and nobody really knows how long it's going to take for it to completely burn out.
And how many species were dependent on the ash tree? Do you remember?
I thought I saw something around 700, 400, something like that. So the trickle-down effect of losing ash trees through the ecosystem is profound, and nobody really understands it. It's big.
Mm. Big impact on songbirds.
Yeah. And at the screening event on November 5th, we're going to, in addition to show the film, we're going to have a Q&A, the stars. Dave and Scott are in the film, and they do a terrific job, as well as some of the national scientists will also be there to talk about some of these issues.
We will continue our conversation about trees and trouble, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition. Thanks to Wynn Jones for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. My guest this afternoon, the producer of the film Trees and Trouble, Andrea Torice, Cincinnati Park Board Natural Resources Manager David Gamstetter, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign. You can join us 513-419-7100 as we talk about the film Trees and Trouble. You can email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's talk with Larry in Cincinnati. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Okay, good. I was hit by a very large ash tree on Wooster Pike in Columbia Township. And I mean, it totaled the van, and I was about 2 feet from death.
Wow.
And the state came, and I've run this mission to get these ash trees down. And the state came, and they took what belonged to them. But there are so many on private property, and I just don't know how to do this, how to get these people to get these trees down. And so I'm just looking for some help on that.
Yeah. Okay, Larry. He brings up a good point. It's a safety issue. These trees are going to fall at some point.
He does. In Cincinnati, if there's a tree on private property that threatens the roadway, we have the ability to issue orders to the property owner. We usually give them a reasonable amount of time to deal with it. And if they don't, then we have the right to go on the property and remove the tree, make it safe, and then send them a bill. I'm sure there's some kind of process like that for for the state or whoever is the agency responsible for the roads there.
How big of a job is it to get all these trees? I mean, there just have to be so many of them. How do you get to all of them?
You prioritize. We were lucky that we weren't the first big city in the state that got EAB. We kind of looked at Toledo. Toledo, it got ahead of them, and they had literally thousands of dead ash trees along their streets. We got started on it in 2007 when it first got here, and we were actually removing trees before they were infested, some of the bigger ones, to get them out, get our numbers down, get them replaced to be able to maintain the the integrity of the street and the neighborhood.
City of Chicago has 90,000 ash trees. Many cities planted ash trees after the elm trees disease hit, Dutch elm disease in the 1950s. And so a lot of cities are grappling with how do you deal with this on both public and private property. Again, Cincinnati has done a really good job as a city overall in trying to address this, but it's a safety hazard.
You know, on a canopy basis, it's a double whammy because the huge expense of removing trees is largely being covered by money the cities would have spent on planting trees. So you're not only losing the trees that died, the ash trees, but you're not getting the trees that you would have planted. So it hurts. Mm.
And that's actually another thing that I look at in my film, which is that here we've had something that's caused by global trade, and yet local communities are having to pay the price and the cost. And many municipalities are really strapped, and they cannot afford the way, especially with EAB, which comes in very quickly, and then you have this crisis. And then the cities don't have money to replant and reforest, which is why the work of groups like Taking Root is so critical, is that we need to come together as a community and replant so that we don't lose the beautiful canopy that we have.
513-419-7100 to join us as we talk about the film Trees in Trouble. And let's talk with Bob in Loveland. Hi, Bob.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thank you.
All right. My question is, if the bumps are in the outer bark in the cambium layer, are the trees still being repurposed, like the core, for like lumber or anything like that? Or how? What do they do to dispose of them?
Hmm. Bob, that's a great question. And that was something we recognized early on as making lemonade out of lemons. So we started our urban timber program, and the first 40,000 square feet of board feet of lumber that we cut out of ash trees, we sold to Cincinnati Public Schools when they were undergoing the school renovation process. It was used in the Montessori schools for furniture and casement. And when that program kind of ended and we started milling our ash logs into flooring. And we still have a little bit of that left. If you're interested in that, I can give you a number to call. It's kind of wrapping up now. Most of the trees we have left aren't near the edge of parks or in roads where we can get to them, where it's cost effective to move them. But it's a very good question because the center of the logs is still great, great wood.
513-419-7100 to join us, and we'll talk with Brenda and Over the Rhine. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I was struck by the introductory remarks referencing the experience of Burnet Woods, and it's been a really great place for me to just go to refresh. And I would hope that it could remain somewhat in the natural state on the trails. I know there is some talk about where I heard our mayor say he wanted to make it more like Washington Park, which is a lovely park also, but I like the wooded trails, and I worry about pavement and its impact on the trees there. So okay. Also, there's a lovely show at the Urban Design Studio in Corryville, a photograph taken throughout the year at Burnet Woods.
Okay.
Hi, Brenda. There is a master plan for Burnet Woods Park, and most of it centers around the green side that you're referring to. There's a MSD project there, the sewer has overflow issues, and there's a project there to separate out the combined sewage from it and create the reestablish the waterway that used to flow through the park, increasing the amount of storage of the lake, and then and also possibly offloading some of the stormwater from UC. There is a little bit of built park. There's proposed a restaurant at the corner of Clifton Avenue near Ludlow. But most of it is actually taking out roads and creating a bike trail through it that follows the stormwater project. And the University of Cincinnati has done a lot of work on that. I also teach there in the DAP program, and I led a class of architecture, horticulture, engineering, and planning students this past spring. And I can assure you that all these built improvements, there's a lot of work going into how to minimize the footprint of the built environment to create a pervious kind of park remaining that way and replanting.
Okay. Let's talk with David in Oxford. David, good afternoon.
Yeah, I just had an observation to offer based on my own experience with losing about 70 ash trees in my yard.
Wow.
I live on about 3 acres outside of Oxford, and in the last 2 years, I basically lost about 70 ash trees, as I shared. But an interesting thing I observed is there was an ash tree that I cut down about 5 years ago to make room for some solar panels on my roof and give them optimum exposure to the sun. And that little stump, or sent up a shoot that I just sort of let alone, and it has over 5 years developed into probably an ash tree of about 20 feet tall, and the ash borer let that one alone. They didn't bother that at all. And I was reminded of a medieval practice I'd heard of a while back, where they used to have it was a term that began with a C, but they would actually harvest wood by cutting a tree down and then just letting the tree regenerate through its shoots. And I'm wondering if that's even a coping strategy for dealing with this, is paradoxically just kind of take down the healthy trees and then have the shoots replenish themselves. So I just thought I'd offer that as an observation and just hear what you all had to say about it.
Okay, thank you, David.
Well, you know, it's Dutch elm disease sort of in everybody's mind destroyed ash or elm in the country. And really we still have a population of elm because they can grow from seed, get to maturity, and make seeds before they die of Dutch elm disease. Now, there are a few also that seem to be resistant. So elm are still part of our forest. They're not like what they once were. Now, with ash, whether, you know, they can get to maturity and make seeds before they're wiped out by emerald ash borer, I don't really know. But if they do, they will remain a small understory plant, you know, forever. Who knows? There may turn up to be one or two or a handful of resistant trees from which we can build. In 1911, I believe it was, is when chestnut blight came into America and wiped out millions and maybe billions of chestnut trees. And there's 12 out of whatever there once were that have resistance. And from those, a couple of federations, a couple of private groups have built, you know, resistant trees and enough seeds to start to replant it. So who knows what we face. But as far as ash being in our immediate future in the forest, not really any hope for that.
513-419-7100 to join us. And let's talk with Jeff in Lebanon. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. I heard your program and was very interested in the topic. And I'm curious, does the film address how invasive honeysuckle is and what that might do to forest ability to regenerate with new growth?
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
That's a great question, Jeff. And I did not have time to address this honeysuckle issue in the film. It is a huge issue and a really important one. And maybe that'll be the next episode, but I'm hoping that Dave or Scott can talk about it. It's a huge problem, and it's something that does need a film and more education on.
We have 5,000 acres of parkland, and the understory of 2,000 acres of it has been replaced by honeysuckle,
which is another invasive.
Mm-hmm.
plant.
How many threads did you look at? How many different things did you find when you were producing this?
Well, you know, I'm a storyteller, so I looked primarily at the Emerald Ash Borer and how the city and the community dealt with it. But I also touch upon Asian longhorn beetle and some of the other funguses a little bit. But I used the EAB story because it's such a crisis. You know, this was the epicenter here, although it does relate to many of the other as well.
Dave, you were saying the Asian longhorn beetle, they found it in Claremont County, but it hasn't spread into our area at this point. Did I understand that correctly?
It has not been found here.
Thank goodness.
We've all been trained on how to identify it, how to identify the exit holes, what to look for, you know, if we have a storm. So we've all been looking, our crews have been looking for it. So far, so good. Hopefully the quarantine's going to work in Claremont and keep it there.
The eradication effort is massive out there, and it has worked in other places, and it seems to be working there. It's a difficult, awful process, but it's sort of like how you treat cancer in a patient. Mm. You really have to just get it out.
And EAB attacks one species, which is the ash, but ALB,
the longhorn beetle, is worse, isn't it?
Is way worse, although it's slower, and you could talk about what it does.
What kind of trees does it affect?
Maple is its preferred host, but it affects about 11 different genus.
13
different genus. And it's very difficult to control because it's often there for a couple of years before you notice it.
But in other ways, you know, it's a big, slow insect that doesn't move as quickly as emerald ash borer does. So that's why it has been controlled or eradicated in other places.
Can you treat a tree like for the longhorn beetle like you do for emerald ash borer?
There's an argument about whether treatments work or not, and they are working with that. But, you know, it's one of those cases where people tend to take no chances and just remove and chip the trees because the results of it escaping quarantine are so dire. Basically, think about the eastern half of the United States without 100 species of its trees, especially consider maple trees, that gone from the American landscape. And that, I mean, how could you even recognize our continent at that point?
Coming up, more about trees and trouble. You can join the conversation at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are the producer of the film Trees in Trouble, Andrea Torrice, Cincinnati Park Board Natural Resources Manager David Gamstetter, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Andre, again, give us the details. When's the film going to be premiering?
The premiere is Thursday, November 5th, 7 p.m. 6:30, the doors will open. 7 p.m., the program will start. It's going to be a really exciting premiere. It's at the 20th Century Theater, which is a beautiful theater. We're going to have some food. Stars from the film are going to be there, and both national and local. And I also wanted to say that I was really lucky to work with Brian Lovely, who composed the music. He's a local musician here with the Faux Frenchmen. And also, I have to say that the Ohio Humanities Council and the Stephen H. Wilder Foundation were very instrumental in supporting the making of the film. But more than this, the film is beautiful. The way it was shot, I worked with a team of terrific people. Much of this was a labor of love. We did some very innovative shooting. Some of it worked, some of it didn't. We actually notched a GoPro on top of a tree which fell down. So we've got some dramatic shots. We also, one of the last mature ash trees in the city is in Spring Grove. It's 80 years old, seen both world wars. It's kind of a character in the film, and it's very beautiful. So while this is a story that I call a wake-up call, It's also a celebration.
And we don't forget we have got Wendell Young and Thane Maynard appearing, dignitaries. My father-in-law, Bill Myers, will MC the event. Many people remember him as a longtime Cincinnati broadcaster. And the proceeds go to Taking Root and Cincinnati Park Board for tree planting efforts.
And more than anything, it's raising awareness about this issue. I think a lot of people, like you were saying earlier, take trees for granted and don't really think about what's going on and the impact it's going to have on the community if we don't deal with this.
One of the things I love about making films is my own personal transformation in making a documentary. I think people always are, you know, there's a ton of video out there, but I have to say one of the things that's so great about reality as opposed to fiction is that stuff happens that you never can predict. And that's what happened with this film. And I really didn't really know that much about trees or, you know, I thought they were pretty, but I did transform now to see how they're wonderful beings that we need to, that we have a relationship and need to take care of.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with Tim in Georgetown. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
We have about 17 acres in Georgetown, and 12 of them are woods, and I can see where the ash trees are already dying and will soon no longer be with us. I'm wondering, will that ash borer move on to other species once it's killed all the ash trees in the area?
Okay, thanks, Tim.
There's been some worry that it might be moving to fringe tree, Chionanthus virginica. There's been a couple of studies on that. There's been some evidence that it has actually been, you know, making galleries in the wood of fringe tree. But so far, we've seen no deaths. Fringe tree is very different. It's in the same family, the same genus as ash are, or same family as ash. And people have been concerned about that and a few other things. Right now, it doesn't appear to be happening.
Let's talk with Ellie in College Hill. Hello, Ellie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
Thank you for doing what all you do. Trees are very important. I'm a docent at Spring Grove, so I get it. It's a lovely
You don't take trees for granted, do you?
I was there yesterday.
My question kind of falls more into the issue of legalese about private property and trees adjacent to your property that are quite clearly diagnosed with emerald ash, and I have one, and it's a huge tree, and part of it fell down on my neighbor's shed yesterday, and it damaged part of our fence. And so I'm trying to kind of go through what I understand from Ohio law is that if I send a certified letter, I've already had a guy come out and look at the tree. It has been diagnosed by a certified arborist. And so it's my understanding, according to Ohio law, that if I do that and I notify them that they're responsible for taking down the tree, if they don't take down the tree, then they got to fix my fence. Is that in fact true? Do you know about that? I hate.
We
to
have no
down
attorneys
the tree,
on the so. Panel, but
you
we'll
have
give
to
it our
check
best
with
shot.
Your homeowner's insurance. I have to tell you another reason I made the film was that I had a tree fall in my backyard. I didn't know it was an ash tree, and it almost fell on my neighbor's yard. And call up your, if you have homeowner's insurance, and find out what your policy covers.
Ellie, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Let's talk with Dean in Waynesville. Hi, Dean.
Hey, hello. Yeah, great talking to you. Nice show. Mine's kind of a historical. 25, 30 years ago, a fellow I was working with had a boat in Florida, and he'd go to from Ohio to Florida, and on the way back, he would have wood. It would be mahogany at that time. It was actually used to make a subframe to support ships or large pleasure craft that were being shipped from China and the Orient. It's interesting that he was making furniture out of that at that time. Now, I'm sure they've changed that, but it's kind of an interesting perspective.
Okay. Thanks, Dean. We appreciate the phone call. 513-419-7100. If you'd like to join us, let's talk with Pete in Loveland. Hi, Pete.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How about you?
Hey, I'm good. I missed a couple of minutes of the program earlier, so you may have touched on this already, but I was on Craigslist the other day, and I saw a guy was giving away free firewood that was an ash tree that was cut down. And I had always heard that you should not move firewood because that would be spreading the bug around. And I wrote back to him and I told him that. And he got back to me and said that he had read that that is not a problem anymore because of the pervasiveness of the problem that there aren't enough ash trees left to concern yourself with about moving firewood. So I wanted to know what you have to say about that.
Okay, thanks, Pete.
In Ohio, they basically gave up. Within the state of Ohio, you can move wood from county to county and not be breaking the law. Now, that may change between state to state or within counties in other states. But in Ohio, emerald ash borer is so pervasive that they simply quit all the quarantines.
We had a question from Bill via Facebook, and he says he's treating four ash trees, and he wants to know, is he doomed to continue in this fight forever?
My understanding is the further down the road you get, and, you know, right now we're in basically the peak infestation, so the pressure of the insect is very high. As we get down the road and less insects are out there, you will probably have to treat much, much less.
He also was wondering if he asks about how an Ohio tax, is there an Ohio tax credit for treating the ash?
I haven't heard.
Yeah, that's not something I've heard of either.
No, but, you know, the film does raise the question. Many municipalities have set up tree ordinances that are out of date in terms of, or need to be revamped and reconsidered. And that is something that communities can do. It's another thing that is a proactive tool, which is to look at your tree ordinances and make sure they're up to date and to have EAB invasive plants in place. This is also discussed in the film, and we'll be talking about that a little bit at the premiere if people want to know more about what their municipalities can do. And Scott, you probably can.
Oh, no.
A little more. No?
Yeah. Hey, we've got about a minute left. Okay. I just wonder, what can people do on an individual basis to deal with this? What would each of you advise?
Number one is observe your trees, and if there's a problem, get a certified arborist out to look at them. That's a good way of knowing if, say, Asian longhorn beetle has gotten out of Claremont County and is somewhere else, to have somebody that knows what they're doing take a look at why your tree died or is dying. Plant more trees, obviously, and be more aware.
Dave, what advice would you have?
My number one would be plant more trees. The best time to plant a tree, say, is 10 years ago. So get your shovel out and get to it.
Yeah, it wouldn't hurt if we got the canopy to 50% in this area, or even higher, right?
Right.
Andrea?
Well, I hope people will come to the sneak preview premiere on November 5th and ask questions. Also, it will be on CET and National Public Television. November 22nd is the broadcast on CET.
And you're taking this to other communities as well, right?
Yes, and we are offering the film as a community tool for people to talk about trees in their community as well.
You can get the tickets at the takingrootinfo.info website and also by calling the theater at 731-8000.
And we'll have a link to the website Scott was mentioning at wvxu.org as well. So thanks everybody for joining me this afternoon. Trees in Trouble producer Andrea Torice, Cincinnati Park Board Natural Resources Manager David Gamstetter, and Scott Berline, Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden horticulturist and chairman of the Taking Root campaign. Taking Root and the Cincinnati Park Board are going to hold that sneak preview that Andrea mentioned of Trees in Trouble. It'll be at the 20th Century Theater in Oakley, November 5th at 7 o'clock. The film viewing is going to be followed by a question and answer session. Seating is limited, and again, you can find a link to more information at wvxu.org. And Trees in Trouble will have its broadcast premiere November 22nd at 4:30 in the afternoon on CET Connect. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our program are available at wvxu.org. The producer for today's show was Pete Reitmeier, assistant producer Belinda Kai. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney.